Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Folks, we're live. This is Denny Carter with the Roto-World Football Show. I have taken hosting duties from Patrick B. Daugherty IV for just today. I have taken over. Pat is doing other Roto-World things today. He's devastated to not be on the show, but we're going to make it as good as possible. I am joined today by my lovely co-hosts, Lawrence Jackson and Kyle Dvorak. Look, it's the beginning of June. There's not a lot going on, but we are going to still talk your ear off for 45 minutes, maybe 50 minutes. We'll see about the latest news developments, about some fantasy what ifs regarding the Browns offense, the Ravens offense, the Colts offense. One I'm forgetting at the moment, but Falcons offense, and just to see where we stand as a group on these offenses and the stories we're sort of telling ourselves. But first, we wanted to start with news. And, this news is not piping hot, not fresh out of the oven. I understand that. It happened a few days ago. But we did get a report about 3 days ago that Russell Wilson last year turned down a trade to the Philadelphia Eagles. Of course, he eventually went with the Broncos. Whether that was the right call, we'll see. We'll see how it happens this year with Sean Payton at the helm. But guys, Kyle, I want to start with you. You said you had some quick thoughts on this. How do we see this in hindsight? Russell Wilson saying, no thanks, I don't want to go to what is probably the best, most well-run franchise in the entire NFL.
Well, this isn't even like news. This was reported like days after the Wilson trade, like a year ago, over a year ago, this came out. And I guess it just didn't get traction the first time, or it's been such a long year and 3 months or whatever that like we forgot about it. But he also, in that exact same report or around that same time of reporting, turned down the Commanders, turned down the Eagles, and we had this list of teams he was supposedly willing to go to. But like, this aspect of what we're getting now is not news at all. Like, it is something we've known for 15 months. There's nothing new to update other than a second reporter arguably confirming it, but I don't know if he even mentioned the first time it was reported. Like, he also didn't know he was reporting stale stuff. So, I mean, I think the Russell Wilson trade, like, you probably don't want to give up that much for a quarterback coming off of a down year when he's 30-some years old and he's only ever played, like, in one system. I thought we knew he was pretty good, but I guess we didn't know how good he was exactly.
Yeah.
On the other hand, he went to a team that was hilariously horribly run by a first-year head coach who seemingly was brought in to lure Aaron Rodgers to the team, so he was not even the quarterback target of intention by the Broncos. So, like, I'm not giving Russ a pass. Far from it for last year. Terrible stuff from Russell Wilson, but, like, I don't know. He could have been on a team like A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith, Dallas Goedert, a better offensive line, better coaching. Like, maybe those things make the deal not look as embarrassing in hindsight. But on the other hand, we live in a universe in which we know Jalen Hurts last year was better than Russell Wilson by a mile and was as good as Russell Wilson's ever been. Like, Jalen Hurts was in that top tier of passers last year and just doesn't get the credit he deserves for being as good as the likes of, our Joe Burrows, our Josh Allen's in terms of like EPA, CPOE, he was right there. So on the one hand, maybe we look too specifically at how bad Russell Wilson turned out, right, and things could have been better in Philly. On the other hand, we may forget just how good the decision to roll with Jalen Hurts and not try and caveat that in any way was. They didn't just say like, oh, we'll give Jalen Hurts a shot. They said they pushed the chips in on him. So, I mean, yeah, things broke in their favor. Maybe we don't laugh at them as much as we do the way things turned out with Denver. But also, like, we've known this for a while. This is not even news.
Here on the Roto World Football Show, folks, we cover news that is 15 months old, at least. Okay, you know, this is what we do. So I appreciate Kyle for pointing out how short my attention span is, because I have no recollection of that.
Someone had to tell me this. Someone else had to tell me this in our company Slack chat.
Yeah, well, it probably sound better now. Like, it sounds better for the engagement now that Jalen Hurts got that contract. You know what I'm saying? So now you could go back and look at it like, oh, but it's like, is that a fact? Is that a fact that he turned down the Eagles? Like, is that known as a fact, or is it just something that was, you know, put out there? Like, because it sound kind of crazy them coming into the season. It seemed to me like they was, like you just said, Kyle, they pushed in the chips on Jalen Hurts. They traded for AJ Brown. Like, this is what you do with these young quarterbacks. But whether it's true or not, if it is true, be happy, Eagles fans, that you know, Russ was, you know, he saw something in the Broncos that he just didn't see in the Eagles. So, you know, there you go.
That's true. And maybe he saw a chance to completely control things in Denver, you know, kind of, you know, because he goes to Philadelphia and he's part of like a very high functioning organization, a head coach who I don't think would let Russ have his own personal office on the second floor of the headquarters and not go into the locker room and not communicate or hang out with teammates, like all that stuff. I don't think that flies with Sirianni and Howie Roseman in Philadelphia. Maybe Russ liked that opportunity.
He saw the power vacuum in Denver and was like, that's an opportunity I can seize upon, even if it will be an embarrassment for my career for years to come.
Nobody's going to stop me in Denver. I think that may have been the appealing thing for Russell Wilson. I will say that Howie Roseman, you know, who over the past, 3, 4, 5 years has been seen as a genius, a savant, okay? And I'm among those who have been effusive with praise of Howie Roseman. I think that this situation, if true, shows that we all depend on a little good luck sometimes, right? I mean, you know, this is very lucky. And this another part of this story that I really hadn't considered is, yes, why would you replace Jalen Hurts, an ascending quarterback, dual threat quarterback, just an absolute terror to opposing defenses? Why would you abandon him or sit him for a declining veteran who at his best is a really solid game manager? It just doesn't make much sense.
Eagles was in the playoffs last year. I'm sorry.
The year before,
the Eagles just made the playoffs. They got bounced by the Bucks rather quickly, but they had made it, right?
Right. Yeah. So
and they made it. Yeah, and they the Bucks showed them, you know, what they could not do at the time. They really shut down that Philadelphia offense. But you know what? The best thing about the Eagles is that they are willing, they're ready and willing to become, as they say on the NFL broadcast, become multiple. This is my most hated phrase. And they were multiple last year, folks. They ran it on some teams and they passed it against others. And it was all very good for fantasy. Any last word here on the bullet dodged by the Eagles? Oh, or the Commanders? No one wants to talk about the Commanders, huh?
That one seemed a little more realistic because, you know, that they weren't in the playoffs. They didn't have a quarterback that was playing even decent. So that one would make a little more sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Commanders, I mean, I know that Dan Snyder is, I guess, relinquishing the team. It seems like it, you know, it seems like that's happening. Although things haven't been totally 100% confirmed on the purchase of the franchise. But I mean, going to the most toxic franchise in American professional sports seems like a bad career move, no matter who you are. And I'm sure Russell Wilson thought the same. All right, folks, we're going to move into some of the, I don't want to call them news items, but I'll call them newsy items. Newsy items that may affect the way we are looking at players as we furiously draft best ball teams. I think Kyle, were you up at 4 a.m. the other day drafting a team? Is that right?
No, that's sick. I just got off vacation. I am slacking on my best ball. I am taking all of my teams and putting them in the final like 3 weeks of the summer because it worked a lot during the draft season. Then I thought, yeah, I'll take some time off. And then I was like, oh, we have the magazine, so I have to do that. And then I was like, all right, you guys got this. I'll see you in August.
It would be cool. I don't know if you guys agree. It would be cool if the NFL had an off season. You know, that is one thing that I think Roger Goodell should consider.
No, there is one. It's been like this past week. But then, you know what I'm saying? Once
I was in Colorado for it. I took my one week of the off season and I left.
Kyle had the intel. Now, when DeAndre Hopkins pick a team, then the season gets back going again. So we had that. We had a nice little week. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But hey, you know.
Yeah, well, that's a good transition, Lawrence, just like we planned it. Thank you for throwing DeAndre Hopkins out there, because it was reported last week that there's a, quote, strong possibility DeAndre Hopkins could land in Cleveland with his former quarterback, Deshaun Watson. The Athletic's Zach Jackson wrote recently that, quote, Watson said he regularly talks with Hopkins and has long considered him a brother. So we can assume a private full court press is also taking place. A lot of, you know, reading of the tea leaves, and that's all we can do really here. And also dissecting every single social media post by DeAndre Hopkins, which is my new favorite pastime. It's just everybody's do all the cool kids. They're just dissecting it like the Zapruder film. But we're trying to read the tea leaves. It seems like, guys, Kyle, it seems like Cleveland would be the most likely landing spot, you know, for Hopkins. Do you agree, disagree with that? And then what would that, you know, mean for fantasy purposes?
Yeah, that makes sense as like the most likely landing spot. I think there are a lot of spots that have like 8-12% chance, like them, Chiefs, Bills, who have financials of it to work out. And then the impact of, does he want to go to like a true contender, as in the Chiefs are the number one contender, whereas the Browns didn't even make the playoffs last year. But you could envision them very easily making that leap if Watson is not terrible. And he's friends with Watson. So I think they've got enough invested at receiver. Like, they did the day two pick swap to get Elijah Moore. Last year, they spent a day two pick on David Bell. This year, they spent a day two pick on Cedric Tillman. And they have Amari Cooper already locked into that number one spot, barring Hopkins joining the team. Mm-hmm. I don't think they need it. I think there's still a pretty solid landing spot because all the guys I just named are like, they've invested. Have they reaped the rewards of those investments? Not yet. And like, the Jets clearly also having invested a day two pick in Elijah Moore, yeah, said, no, we're done reaping these rewards. They haven't been as fun as we thought they'd be. And David Bell didn't do anything as a rookie. So, and they're looking at playing more three wide. So maybe they want to run deeper at receiver than they have in years past. So I get why they would go for it. I don't think it's a necessity, but at this point, like, do any of these teams have a necessity at receiver that is so great that they are forced? Like, they are, you know, twist my arm, I have to go get DeAndre Hopkins. You would think the Chiefs would. They did it without any number one receiver last year, excluding obviously Travis Kelce. The Bills, I think, have more of a need than any of these teams, mm-hmm, but are they willing to financially commit to a player like Hopkins? I don't know. And it depends how much Hopkins wants too.
Lawrence, are we going to see DeAndre Hopkins in Cleveland this year?
Well, you know, like Kyle said, it would make sense. Like, that, you don't feel like they need him, but because, you know, they weren't guns ablazing last season, as soon as Deshaun Watson got to playing, you know, they have room to explore that. Because while they did invest, like Kyle was mentioning, Cedric Tillman, Elijah Moore, none of those guys are better than DeAndre Hopkins. And I feel like it's like a situation where last season, if you're the Eagles, yeah, you got a nice rookie in Devontae Smith, who just had 900 yards, but you double down and go get A.J. Brown, and you saw them in the Super Bowl. The Chiefs, Kyle brought up, that'll be interesting because it's like they just won the Super Bowl, and they didn't need nobody as good as DeAndre Hopkins. So they could either be looking at it from that perspective, or they could be looking at it from a perspective where it's like, Well, you know, we did win the Super Bowl because we had Patrick Mahomes and no real number one receivers, but this will give us an even better chance because these teams are gunning for us. And yes, Kyle, the Bills, I feel like out of all these teams, you know, that he's been linked to, the Chiefs, Ravens, Browns, the Bills are, in my opinion, the ones who would stand to benefit from this the most. The main reason why is because Gabe Davis didn't go for 2,000 yards last year like everybody thought he was. So, yes, they need that. And it showed up, you know, it showed up a lot more as the Bills season wore on, you know. So Dalton Kincaid is good, but that's that you need more. You need more, you know. So, but from what we see and how it's been going, you know, Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins have had a lot of success together. So it at least looked like the Browns is the front runners.
So, yeah, and I think that the whole idea of Hopkins, you know, later in his career, wanting to win a Super Bowl, wanting to join a contender, really for the first time, you know, the Cardinals were really never a contender. Obviously, the Texans were not truly. I mean, they were, you know, they were the
Texans. They blew that giant lead to the Chiefs, didn't they? They did that one time.
Yeah, they was up 24-0. But it was, if you was watching that game, you could see it unfolding. It was like worse than Falcons 28-3. Like, you knew.
It was instantaneous. It was like.
I couldn't. Right. It's like you just knew.
Gone. So I actually think that the Browns make sense from that perspective if Hopkins wants to join a contender. And I know, okay, they're the Browns. Hey, what are you talking about? And I'm no Browns apologist or anything. And I don't want to get Browns fans too excited because, you know, they've been through enough. But I will say that with a defense that I don't want to say elite, but a very good defense, with an improved, and we're going to talk about this in a second, sort of kind of bleed into what we're doing in the second segment here. With an improved Deshaun Watson led offense with investments in the passing game. Okay. I think that this team can compete. I think that it is designed to compete in a small window starting this year. So if Hopkins joins the Browns, I don't think that he's just joining it to play with his former buddy in Houston. I don't think that he's doing it for money. You know, money's a big factor, but I think that the Browns can actually be a real contender. Now, can they get past the Bills? Can they get past the Bengals and the Chiefs? You know, probably not.
Money, one last thing. They the Bills and Chiefs both have like less than $2 million in cap. Not that they can't restructure or cut players to get there, but the Browns have like over $12 million, I think. So it's an easy swing for them. Both teams probably still have rookies left to sign. Maybe I haven't checked on the rookie pick tracker, but for at least Bills and Chiefs, like, they have work to do to get into a spot just to put them on the roster for 1 year, whereas the Browns are already there.
And Donovan Peoples-Jones is a pretty good player, and from a fantasy, he had a nice little stretch mid-season where he would just get 5 receptions and 70 yards for 5 game straights and sprinkle a few touchdowns in there. But I actually like drafting him later rather than Elijah Moore earlier, just because I've seen him have some success in that offense. But if they get DeAndre Hopkins, it would be Donovan Peoples-Jones who will be mostly affected by that.
Right. Yes. And we are going to get a little more into that in just a moment. We have, Dalvin Cook, again, news-ish item on Dalvin Cook. Okay. not actual real news, but the Miami Herald's Barry Jackson reports recently that Dalvin Cook is, quote, a real possibility for the Dolphins if he's released by the Vikings. Cook is also training in South Florida and is, quote, open to a fresh start. We may have to wait until later this month. The Vikings may look to make a decision on whether to keep Dalvin Cook ahead of mandatory OTAs later in June. So we're still kind of waiting. We thought June 1st might be the date where we saw some movement on the Dalvin Cook front. I do have some sort of breaking news about Alexander Mattison has been released from the, I'm kidding. No, has been taken.
Where are you talking about?
This is real. This is real. Madison has been removed from the banner on the Vikings, the Vikings Twitter banner. Okay.
He briefly held a spot on the banner over Dalvin Cook for I assume a few weeks. Yeah, that was something. It was big news.
That was not nothing. Okay. Like if we're going to parse every single social media thing, that's something. Okay.
That's something. First they don't have Dalvin Cook on it. Now no Alexander Mattison. We might be looking at an Adrian Peterson reunion right here, fellas.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Let's go, baby.
42
and
years
you
old,
said Ted. Dalvin Cook training in South Florida. Other than the fact that he was born in South Florida, played college football in Florida, probably has family in Florida. I'm sure it means something.
I mean that he's in South Florida just to make the quick drive over to the Dolphins headquarters and say, "I'm here, guys. I'm here. I'm ready to play." All right. So we have basically Alexander Mattison not being drafted in best ball leagues as if Cook is going to move on. Okay. It's sort of a tepid ADP right now. There's clearly some hope that Madison will take on a three down role, which is the second part of this news item, which I should have got to, before I started babbling here, is that the Vikings reportedly see Alexander Madison as a three down back, which maybe isn't a surprise because that's the way that he largely has been treated when Dalvin Cook has missed time over the past two seasons. So, we have these two items together. If you're drafting best ball right now, Lawrence, are you looking to Madison at his ADP as like an auto pick, assuming that Cook is gone, or do you think Cook's going to stick around?
I would be drafting, and we've done a mock draft with us, Roto World people. And he looked like he was drafted as the three down back for the Vikings. And Dalvin Cook was, I took Dalvin Cook in the fourth round. And that's like, he's off the Vikings now. So it's like Alexander Mattison moves a little up. Dalvin Cook comes a little down. So I think as of today, you would just, play it like it's going to be Alexander Mattison. Again, them mentioning something, we see him as a three down back, which is something, like you said, Denny, we already knew that because every time he's, in there for Dalvin Cook, he assumes that role and he'll give us a running back 1 week, whichever two or three weeks out of the season, we know it's coming. So I would draft him like he was going to be the Vikings running back for this year. You couple that with the fact that Dalvin Cook all but sounds like he ready to go. So, it seemed like it's only a matter of time before that value's not as much of a value anymore.
And Kyle, how are you treating Dalvin Cook in drafts? I mean, he is being drafted a little bit later than we're used to seeing, all the uncertainty swirling around him. Does that appeal to you at all? Or are you focusing on Madison later?
Yeah, I'm not like awfully interested in Cook. Like, even if he, like, Miami's a weird spot because they gave 2 year, roughly $6 million. I think one's 5.6 and 6 million deals to Jeff Wilson, to Mostert. And then supposedly they were in talks to, before the draft, to get Dalvin Cook. They waited out, as like most teams do, like, no reason to act when you don't have to. And they take a running back who fits the scheme really well. Like, are they, like, they're not obviously not trading. It's going to be a cut at this point, almost certainly. So, what are they doing with four running backs? Two to three of whom are mostly not playing special teams outside of return duties. And even then, like, we're getting a ton of special teams use out of these guys who they committed some money to. So I'm not sure it's like a guarantee that if he's cut, that he goes to Miami, which admittedly would be probably a good spot. It's a really strong scheme. They'd probably use him well, but I don't know how much of the role he'd get. But that's sort of the good scenario. There are a lot of sort of downside scenarios where he just goes to a team that we don't find particularly interesting. And he's coming off a career worst year in rush yards over expected, two of his three worst seasons in PFF rushing grade were last year and the year before that. Even simply just his yards per carry has fallen in back-to-back seasons. Like, that 2020 season is definitely the best we'll see from Cook. And now it's just a matter of how closely he can stay to that. He's already been falling, so he's an aging running back who one team has already said, we do not want this player for the price we already said we'd pay them. Like, I'm not sure how much work he'd get at the next spot he lands. I'm not sure how efficient he would be. I'm really not interested. I do like the idea of Madison as like a potential three down back, even if it's just for a year.
Yeah. So some of the pushback on Twitter about Madison is he's not good. And, you know, for most part, that's true. Like, he doesn't he doesn't pop in any category. Like, he's
fine.
He's not astounding, you know, as a runner or a pass catcher. But I don't care. Like, the guy, the guy gets a three down roll and a good offense, so what? So, you know, so what if you have to deal with a bunch of like 3.5 yard carries on second down? Like, who, you know, I'm fine with that. I just give me some touches. And really, I do think that he fits. And I know you guys would be shocked to hear this. I think he fits the kind of roster that I sometimes usually draft, which is, you know, lots of receivers and tight ends up top. And then you're just kind of scraping for touches, running back touches in the middle. And at the end of drafts, I mean, you can't get better than a guy who could take on that role. Right, Lawrence? Am I right?
Yeah. So because you're saying that, I actually got a question for both of you. Okay. So when this happens, when Dalvin Cook becomes a Dolphin, well, who's finishing higher, Dalvin Cook with that offense or Alexander Mattison? Because even though Kyle spoke to, you know, a couple of down years, not as good as his 2020.
Yeah.
I mean, he's better than Alexander Mattison. So given that in the situation, like, we know it'll be Mattison in Minnesota. But then you got Dalvin Cook attached here to the Dolphins who, you know, yeah, they got all those running backs. But none of them was good last year. Like, none of them was like, oh, man, we like, no Dalvin Cook over here. Like, they could use Dalvin Cook. So where would y'all see who would you see finishing ahead of the other one?
Mattison for me.
Oh, yeah. All right.
He's getting all them touches. Denny, like you said, totally. Dalvin Cook's better. Even if Dalvin Cook's like two back-to-back years that are like not up to his standards, he's better. No disputing on this. Mattison's a guy for all intents and purposes. He's going to be a guy that gets like 280 touches. And I really doubt that we see even a close level of touches, specifically after the team invested in A.J. Hanks. Like, I agree. Mostert also basically just a guy, as is Jeff Wilson. But like, the talent differential between Dalvin Cook and then A.J. and Mostert and Wilson versus what Alexander Mattison will have, which will be like career kick returner Kenny Nwangwu, seventh round pick Dwayne McBride, and Ty Chandler, who, like, I can't really name a thing I remember about Ty Chandler, if we're being honest.
He went to North Carolina. There you go. He went to North Carolina Tar Heels. There you go.
Listen, I want those Mattison touches for sure. And if I want to overthink it on Mattison, and folks, I love to overthink. That is one of my favorite hobbies. I would say that the Vikings throwing it more than any other team besides the Chiefs in the red zone, okay, being the most pass heavy red zone team, does make me think that maybe Mattison doesn't have the sort of crazy touchdown upside that you might think. But honestly, for the ADP right now, I think that's okay. I think once the shoe drops, once the other shoe drops here and Cook is on another team, I think Mattison then probably has a disgusting ADP at some point.
I agree with this because, like,
oh, it'll go
pretty high. Like, yeah. We're pretty sure that Dalvin Cook's gone. So I don't mind the fact that we're pretty much calling it a done deal. Like, I don't mind that we're rounding it up, but we're already pricing him close to where he should be. But the market's not going to think that. The market thinks it has not priced in Dalvin Cook being cut. It mostly has. And it's going to make this egregious jump. So I totally agree. If you want Mattison now, if you want the touches now, you can take them now because you're not going to get them at a reasonable price, I assume, within a month or so.
On the Dalvin Cook side, too, I just wanted to say real quick that we better hope he go to the Miami Dolphins because probably anywhere else, fantasy-wise, he's going to be messing up some other backfield. So we want him to go to the Dolphins. Like, there's literally not a team I could think of right now where it's like it wouldn't be messed up for, like, the other running back that we probably want to draft.
Right. He goes to Jacksonville or the Cowboys. Please.
Cowboys. No. Please. Yeah. Oh, Cowboys. No. Listen, I was thinking the Cowboys, but I was just like, nah, man, that can't be, like, that's too unrealistic. But the NFL is unrealistic.
Yeah,
anything goes.
We have a report as we're recording that Jerry Jones is refusing to say no to Ezekiel Elliott, maybe possibly coming back to Dallas. So I do think the Tony Pollard thing will be completely messed up within the next 60 days. I just want to put that out there, folks. Before we get into our next segment here on Fantasy What Ifs, I wanted to tell you quickly about the Roto-World Draft Guide Bundle, because every season is draft season. Get your Roto-World Draft Guide Bundle today and dominate your football, baseball, and basketball drafts, packed with profiles, rankings, projections, Order today and get all three RotoWorld draft guides for the price of two. You would be losing money not to do it, folks. Plus, use the promo code Barry and save an extra 20% at checkout.
Welcome back to Money Mania, where we're talking tax season and what to do with that refund. If you really want your tax refund to have a positive impact, I'm bullish on Ohio's 529 plan. I always say, invest in something you love. Well, there's nothing we love more than our kids. So invest in their future and let your tax refund help. For as little as $25, you can get started today at collegeadvantage.com.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
On to our fantasy what ifs segment. And honestly, this is I love to talk about what ifs because it sort of gives some clarity to me about how to view certain offenses. Because eventually, you know, we pontificate a lot, we talk a lot in May and June and July about like what's gonna happen, who do I like, who do I not like. Eventually you have to come to a conclusion. You have to tell yourself a valid story, okay, like some hopefully a fact-based story about how an offense is going to operate. And so I picked four. We'll see if we can get through all of them today, but we're going to start with the Ravens offense for fantasy what ifs. Now the question I have is, what if the Ravens with Todd Monken at offensive coordinator, now that the reign of Greg Roman is over, what if the Ravens are much more pass heavy than they have been over the past 4 years? What does that do for the fantasy value of Rashad Bateman, OBJ, Mark Andrews, Zay Flowers? What does it do for J.K. Dobbins, who was obviously great at the end of last year? And you know, could we finally see? I know I'm asking 100 questions, Lawrence, but I'll start with this.
Answer
one.
All of them in order.
That's right. I want to start with this one. Could we finally see a Baltimore offense that supports more than one fantasy viable pass catcher? Because in the past, it's always just been Andrews, and then maybe you can start like DeMarcus Robinson in a 16-team league. But like, are we finally going to get that this year, where we can start another pass catcher for the Ravens?
No, I think you will, and. To that, actually in 2021, I mean, you had Hollywood Brown finish as the wide receiver 22. So I get you would say that's a dude you would put in there. He put up over 1,000 yards. And I don't actually even believe that they'll pass the ball so much more than they already did. Think about this, fellas. Over Lamar's last 24 starts, he's averaged 29.5 passes per game. Two of those games he got hurt in the first quarter. So the numbers drop. So realistically, we're looking at 31, 32 passes a game already. The difference will be how the passes are distributed in the offense and how we're going to get that. Todd Monken is going to do the exact opposite of what Greg Roman did in the passing game. Greg Roman's passing game was so confined and tight and having fullbacks in the slot running wheel routes. No more of that's going on. None of that. What Todd Monken is going to do, and he already said this is what he did at UGA. He wants to create space. He want to play in space. He wants to widen everything out and make the defense work. What he does do, like Greg Roman, is he's going to use his tight ends, but in a different way. We're not going to just see, three tight ends coming out every play and then, you know, running on third and 15. Nah, he's going to use those tight ends, Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely, much like how he used Brock Bowers, Darnell Washington, two completely different type of players, right? But both was effective. So what he'll be able to do is get these dudes like more catchable targets. Now, it remains to be seen which one of these receivers will step in to fill that void, who will be that receiver we use in fantasy, because we know it's going to be Andrews. We know that for a fact. If OBJ is healthy for a whole year, we know he could still play. You got Zay Flowers. I think it's a good collective group of receivers. It'll be hard to guess which one going to go over 1,000 yards. What we do know is that all it is great for brother Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, I do agree there. Kyle, is there one pass catcher? I know that Lamar recently described Rashad Bateman as wide receiver one. That's what he said. So are we going with Bateman as the other guy besides Andrews who can thrive in this offense, or do you think it'll be somebody else?
I think Bateman might be like the best price adjusted option. Although I do question like how we're going to see him used, because last year it was very effective in that they used him as a deep threat. He was elite in yards per out run. And I think for the very few games we got to see him, he actually helped the offense improve just by being a guy that defenses really had to focus on. He was so efficient that even if he like his targets per out run doesn't look good, he is a high impact player every time they targeted him. So defenses had to respect that. I think it helped everyone. It helped his efficiency. I don't think it would result in him getting the ball a ton, but it helped his efficiency. And more importantly, from an offensive perspective, it helped the offense do what it was trying to do. And then he got hurt and we didn't see very much of it. If he's used like that again, he'll probably give us at least more than we would expect. Good spike weeks. I'm not sure he'll be much of a consistent producer. I also could see us getting just a lot more like short passing game, get the guys the ball, because the way that Greg Roman ran the offense kind of reminds me of, Denny, what you or I would do if we ran an NFL offense. He did a lot of smart things. He did a lot of play action. He passed, like he had his offense pass deep, pre-snap motion. And then you ask him any further specific details and he knows nothing about it.
Nothing.
That's what he did. He did like some of the high-level analytics.
Yeah. It got real tough for them when they look like the best offense in football in between the 20s. But then you get into the red area, it's like, where you depend on, you know, like Lamar and Andrews and J.K. Dobbins, you're like, all right, one of my guys is going to cash in right now, but they don't, because they just get so, you know, they're so tight in that offense. And so what Todd Munkin is going to do, and he's going to spread that out. And the quarterback in the run game, instead of just solely depending on that, he'll use it just as a stressor to the defense, and that'll make the offense as a whole more scary.
That is funny, though, Kyle. Because that's exactly what I would do. Yeah.
He did some good little litmus stuff very well. We know play action is really effective. He did a lot of play action. We know passing deep is a high value play. He did that. And then he just did it again and again, and it stagnated. He didn't like his team wasn't creative. He did a few key things very well. And they still ended up having, obviously, a super high pass rate. And I agree, or super high run rate. And I agree with Lawrence that I don't think they're like a good running team. Their quarterback is a good runner who's good on both scrambles and design runs. I don't think there's anything you can do to change like the entire identity of the offense given the personnel they have. I think they'll be better at passing the football, though. And they'll probably be faster. They'll probably play with more pace, because in the NFL, Todd Monken for his 3 years with the Bucks, they were 11th, 4th, and 6th or something like that in situation neutral pass rate. Situation neutral pace. Their pass rate was pretty average. I think those Bucks teams were probably pretty bad, so they had like inflated pass rates, but you're like, you expect that, you're losing. But even in situation neutral, their pace was very good. They play frenetic, even if they're, you know, going to be a relatively balanced team, and that's safe to expect. But I do think maybe we see a slightly suppressed ADOT, so the offense isn't so like, Lamar, complete a 50-yard pass, or it's three and out, bud. Like, I do think that's something Todd Monken will help, is like smoothing out the complete droughts the offense had, probably with a better quick passing game, something that will also help Lamar stifle the blitz, which is something we know, like, that's kind of been his Achilles heel. They didn't really have a creative solution to stop that. It was just like, sorry, Lamar,
it's incredible.
For him being Superman, that was it.
So, they were just asking so much of him when there are ways to scheme around that. And they just didn't seem to have those counter punches to them. I think Monken will give him the counter punch. And I think that has to be through like short area stuff, yards after the catch, which may just end up being a lot of like Zay Flowers. Dude, you're like a even if he's like 5'9 or whatever, he plays like he's a he plays like a dude. He plays like a grown man. So get that guy the ball and let him work after the catch.
I do hope for some easier throws for Lamar, and also some plays where Lamar doesn't have to dodge 15 tacklers on the same play. That would be nice to see. You talked about the inflated pass rates in Tampa when Todd Monken was the offensive coordinator there. I do have some numbers I wanted to share with the class here. In 2016, they were 15th. The Bucs were 15th in pass attempts. 2017, they were 5th in pass attempts. They had the second highest pass rate in the league. 2018, 4th most attempts, 6th highest pass rate. And then in 2019, when Monken was with Cleveland, they were middle of the road in pass rate. That's not adjusted for how the game is going for neutral game scripts or whatever. But I do think that there's every indication that Lamar Jackson is not returning to the same team that he was, frustrated with. I mean, he expressed a lot of frustration about teams calling out their plays at the line of scrimmage because Greg Roman's system had become so predictable. So hopefully that will create more opportunity, more pass catching opportunity for fantasy purposes. Let's go quickly to Anthony Richardson, under center in Indianapolis. This is the assumption. I think it's a pretty safe assumption here. Yeah. Feel free to push back if you like, but will this make the Colts offense, one of the run heaviest in the NFL last year? Just to throw a number out there, because we love our numbers, folks. Florida was 90th in pass rate last year with Anthony Richardson at the helm. 45% pass rate of Florida. Richardson averaged 5 design runs per game, which is actually not as many as I would have anticipated. So Lawrence, start with you. If the Colts are this super run heavy conservative offense, what does that do for for Michael Pittman and the other pass catchers with the Colts?
I don't know about the other pass catchers, but I think that Michael Pittman could actually have his best year to date. And when you look at the numbers that he's put up so far, you'd be like, oh, maybe he could. It's not like, Michael Pittman's not some yearly 1,300-yard receiver. He has 3 seasons under his belt, and he's went barely over 1,000 in one of those. So let's say the Colts are, let's say they're the most run-heavy team, although I still think that'll be the Bears probably. Justin Fields and them, they didn't start out throwing the ball a ton. As the season went on and, they ran plays that actually worked for him, he ended up averaging 25 passes a game. So that's definitely on the low end. But enough to where, the main guy, Michael Pittman, should be able to eat. Now, not comparing the skill levels of these offenses, but the Eagles were 3rd in rushing attempts last season, 3rd in rushing attempts, but you had AJ Brown, 1500 yards, Devontae Smith, 1200 yards, Dallas Goedert, 700 yards in 12 games. So there's a way to at least get Michael Pittman his due. And whatever those numbers are that he did have at Florida, he was able to, he had 2 games where he threw for 400 yards. So they're going to have to throw. They'll come out wanting to run, especially with Jonathan Taylor. But, younger offense, they're going to have to throw some. So Michael Pittman should be able to do a little some.
So, that's a good point, Lawrence. And if the target distribution is narrow enough, then you do have a path for a guy like Pittman to still get there for fantasy. Hopefully for the rankings I have in the Roto-World draft guide, I'm hoping that's not the case, but that is a good point, Lawrence. So Kyle, as far as, like Jonathan Taylor goes, Jonathan Taylor obviously being taken way later than he was in drafts this time last year. What would a run first system do for him? And what would a mobile quarterback do for him in Indianapolis?
Yeah, I think we've seen I don't want to say it's the most convincing evidence, but it seems generally that the mobile quarterback has a slightly depressing effect on a running back's pass catching prowess or pass catching production, and a slightly positive impact on their efficiency as a runner. To me, I think the one concern would be how much Anthony Richardson gets used at the goal line, as we saw with Jalen Hurts. probably the most used quarterback at the goal line of the past 20 years, like of my lifetime, essentially. Sure. No quarterback has been used more and been more effective at the goal line. So that would be the one concern. But I think even then, it's really not that big of a deal because we've seen the past 2 years, the Eagles running back backfield as a whole was 8th and 5th in purely rushing expected fantasy points. And I expect Taylor to outperform his expected fantasy points while also dominating his backfield. So the Eagles were a better team than in the past 2 years than the Colts will probably be this year. But even if they're just pushing for an above average team and just the total amount of fantasy points their backfield specifically gets, Taylor is getting all of that. And there are so few running backs that can actually say, whatever my team, you know, whatever they allot to the backfield, it's mine. No one else is getting it. So I wouldn't be too concerned even about the goal line stuff just because of how talented he is. It's like making the Derrick Henry bet where like the nerd's like, he just can't keep getting away with it. And then this guy who's like an Olympic level athlete who has disgusting highlight reels every week and plays the Texans a bunch, which will also apply to Jonathan Taylor. This guy just keeps getting there. Like that is very much in the vein of Jonathan Taylor. And we've seen these Shane Steichen backfields have a ton of value. It's just been one we haven't been too interested in the actual running backs. Like Sanders is fine. You know, Gamble's fine. These guys are fine. None of them are Jonathan Taylor. That dude's great. So yeah. I don't think it's really a big deal. I think the concerns might be overblown. And like, I'm not the, like, I'm one of these spreadsheet losers who typically doesn't draft Derrick Henry. And I think that's been a leak in my game. Same way with like Nick Chubb can go out and get 1800 yards on the ground because he's really good. And like the bar to be a really good running back is very high. We don't have very many of them where I think we have more receivers who we could consistently say like,
yes,
Devontae Adams turns out with Derek Carr, he was just as good with Aaron Rodgers. We don't have as many running backs like that. But to say there are none of them, that we just all running backs are the same, like I think that's a step that the nerds have gone a little bit far with. And we should probably find taking Jonathan Taylor. Maybe you don't want to be over your skis on him, but like you can bet on talent and bet on the fact that this coach that's coming in has consistently produced a ton of value for his backfield. How it's been distributed, I don't think it applies too much in the past to how it's going to be in the future. It's going to be Taylor.
We need to be reined in. The spreadsheet warriors need to be reined in. I have bet against Derrick Henry for so long. I actually stopped. I made myself stop betting against Derrick Henry last year. And I'm going to continue to not bet against Henry going forward. He could play until he's 52 years old. I'm still going to bet.
I would draft Derrick Henry until he retires. The Titans offense was one of the worst in the league. And he still ran for 1,500 yards. That's
incredible. Incredible. I will say one thing about like Taylor's PPR prospects. Mobile quarterbacks generally are not dumping it off to running backs to short area targets because a guy like Anthony Richardson can simply scamper for 7 yards and a first down rather than dump it off. So I do that. That sort of hangs over Jonathan Taylor in PPR leagues, but I probably there's too much skepticism of Taylor going into the season. All right, guys, finally, we're going to address the Falcons. We're going to talk about the what ifs for the Atlanta Falcons for Arthur Smith, our favorite coach, our favorite play caller in league history. I'm kidding, of course. So my question to you guys, Lawrence, we'll start with you. What if the Falcons are actually good? Like, what if they're like a 9 or 10 win team? They won 7 games last year. It's the weirdest thing ever, but they won 7 games. They won 6 at home. Okay. No one goes into the dome and wins. Okay. This is just the fact of life. And even if nobody is there, it doesn't matter. You know, we love our Atlanta folks, but so what if the Falcons are good? What does this do? Like for Bijan Robinson, is it good for Kyle Pitts? Is it bad for Kyle Pitts? What do you think, Lauren?
I certainly think they'll be a good team within that division. They'll have a shot to get to those 9 or 10 wins there. Bijan Robinson, you know, he should be the guy that's, you know, just a little shade above the usage of what Cordarrelle Patterson was getting in his 31-year-old prime years. You know, we expect at least that from Bijan Robinson getting picked there at the 8th spot. What it does for Kyle Pitts, I do not know, but we just talked about – actually, I kind of have an idea, but we just talked about the Colts. I find the Falcons will be more so – what people think the Colts will be, and that's running the ball heavy because it's whatever the game script is, they're running. They be down by 2-3 touchdowns, they're running.
Terrible.
And this is not even no exaggeration. We was watching this happen. These boys is down multiple scores running an ISO. You know what I'm saying? So they will be more. I will say this. Arthur Smith said, I think he said about a month ago, he said Kyle Pitts was dealing with some things last season.
He's dealing with terrible offense. He's been dealt
in addition to his injury, he was dealing with some things. And he said that Kyle Pitts was going to have a big year. So if, you know, Kyle Pitts is going to have a big year and Bijan Robinson, he does what we expect him to do. Then they got Drake London. Either the Falcons are going to be really good. That means Desmond Ridder got to be good too then. So, either they're going to be really good or somebody's getting the short end of the stick here.
Sure. Kyle, what do you think? Can Kyle Pitts and Drake London survive positive game script for the Falcons? Are they ever going to throw the ball if they lead for much of this season?
Yeah, I know. It's terrifying to think that, like Lawrence said, dude, they were losing by so much in some of these games, and we're still like first and 10. All right, we pick up 4 yards here, 4 yards closer to losing by 20 or whatever. Right. Like, so on the one hand, like, yeah, it's really difficult to envision this team where Arthur Smith's like his career average as an offensive coordinator and head coach is like a negative 7% pass rate over expected. He's just game in, game out, one of the most conservative coaches. But like generally has been a very efficient team. Like they ran the ball really well last year during his time in Tennessee. They were a really efficient passing team. Again, they did not want to pass. They were terrified of it. When they did it quite well. He's another guy kind of like we're talking about with Greg Roman. He gives his quarterbacks the advantage of play action often, which really helps boost their efficiency, even if I don't like think Desmond Ridder is that good. And I think this could be a like Tyreek Hill to a level of there are two guys and zero other players in the pass catching room that we care about, which goes a long way. I mean, Drake London set the record over the past 20, I think, years for, or it was like 15 years for a target share by a rookie receiver. Kyle Pitts, I think, had the second most receiving yards ever for a rookie tight end. Like, this is what a 1-2 and no one else looks like. And I'm just going to bet on that. I think that's like generally a winning strategy is like, oh, when we find guys that we know, especially as pass catchers, it's really easy to identify.
Yeah.
Oh, these guys are hyper talented. I was talking about like Devontae Adams. Turns out play with Derek Carr, you're fine. Play with Aaron Rodgers, you're great too. You can survive a lot. Can these guys survive this? I don't know. The answer is I don't know. But generally, it's a winning bet when we have identified guys who are just extremely talented pass catchers to just bet on them and be more agnostic of the situation around them. That could burn us this year. Really wouldn't surprise me if it did, to be frank. But I want to bet on the guys who come into the NFL as pass catching talents, highly productive in college, great resumes. The NFL views them as these elite players, and then they produce. Did Drake London produce, 1,200 yards? No, but he dominated this offense, right? He was, like I said, he was one of the most dominant target share rookies we've ever seen. Those are good players. I know those are good players, and I want to, especially at pass catching positions, bet on the guys who are not only good, they have the potential to be elite.
Sure.
I don't want to get too lost in the minutiae of me being terrified of this run heavy offense.
No, I think it's okay for you to feel good about it, Kyle. I think, I was just there over the weekend. I drove by the stadium, good vibes, man. You know, good weather around there, good vibes. So I don't know. We might be optimistic.
it's a vibes based economy. And we, this is what we're basing our fantasy takes on. No, those are really good thoughts from both of you guys. Maybe I will just learn not to fear Arthur Smith and draft his talented pass catchers. We are going to wrap it up here for the Roto World Football Show. Thanks to Kyle and Lawrence for all of their fantastic takes in June, which is, this is hard having good takes in June, but they do it because they're professionals. We will be back with you later this week.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble.
Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.